thanks for the invitation and to come to PI. And so I don't think I'm going to tell you real physics, but I'm going to tell you real materials. Okay. So I think the effects I talked to you today, this fraction quantum anomalous Hall effect, it belongs to the family of quantum Hall physics. So let me just tell you a bit, I think it's really a beautiful story how the quantum Hall effect was discovered. So back to the end of the 1940s, right, at the Bell Labs, these three gentlemen, they discovered this transistor effect, which is a point contact on germaniums. And we know that, right? So these three gentlemen, they won Nobel Prize a few years later. But this discovery of a transistor is really, I think, revolutionized all the microelectronics, right? From these vacuum tubes to desktops to the portable electronics we have today. And we know that the transistor technology is still developing, right? It's just a roadmap from TSMC, you know, from transistor size about 28 nanometer to 7 nanometer. Now they're pushing to 5 nanometer. And there's a rumor it's also 1 nanometer coming out in a few more years. So during this pursuit of this technology, which is a transistor, come out is a great discovery of a quantum Hall effect. And the image I show you here, actually, it's a silicon transistor. And the TAP transistor was first used to discover this quantum Hall effect. So what von Klinten did is that he used this silicon transistor. Then he applied, actually, strong magnetic field to these perpendicular to the samples or to the electron gas. Then when you measure the Hall resistance across the sample, then he observed these quantized values. If you think about it in terms of Hall conductivities, it actually precisely quantized in the unit of E squared of H. Here, right, E is the charge of electrons, and H is Planck constant. So this is quite remarkable. Basically, you can get these quantized Hall conductance only determined by these fundamental constant of the fundamental physics constant. So a couple years later, the sample quality actually improved. This time is in gallium arsenide with high electron mobilities. So with such high mobility samples, the disorder effect, right, gets lowered, then the electron-electron interaction becomes important. So when you have these strong electron interactions in the systems, so not only, right, these quantization happens at integer values, there's a new plateau appears in the measurement at the one-third of fillings of Landau levels. So in this case, right, the conductance, right, still right up in the C times E squared of H, but now C can be a fractional number, not just integer. So this is the fraction quantum Hall effect. Now we look at the sample they used to observe these fraction quantum Hall effect. Okay, this is actually the first sample used to gallium arsenide. Is the size of it's only out of 1 centimeter, and you see all these electrical contacts. Okay, according to the modern, you know, transistor technology, right? This is far from impressive. Okay, it's really dirty samples, but it's quite impressive, right? With such a dirty sample, you see beautiful quantizations. So that means something's magic happens in the sample, right? Doesn't matter silicon or gallium arsenide, they have very different material properties, very different materials, but they give you the collective behavior of electrons, actually give you these beautiful quantization with strong magnetic fields. So now we know that something right, governs these properties called topologies. So my colleague, David Solis at the University of Washington, I think in 1982, with his collaborators, actually developed these so-called, now we know as a TKKN formula. So with this formula, what it says is that the quantization, okay, this chain number C is only determined by the integral over barrier curvature of the first Brillouin zone, right, and divided by 2 pi. So this just gives the explanation where these quantization coming from, actually coming from the topology of these electronic barrier curvatures. Then a couple years later, and Chen Niu and also David Solis and Yongxi Wu, they further, right, extend these TKKN formula into these new regime, which is many body interactions and the substrate disorder also present. Also present. So use these formula, they also found that right, the chain number can also be fractional. Okay, so means is that this fractionally quantized Hall conductance is also a topological invariant. The beauty of these two papers basically lay the groundwork of the origin of these both integer and the fraction quantum Hall effect. And now we also know as a chain insulators. I would just mention that for the second paper, when they derived these many body chain numbers, they actually didn't consider magnetic field in the system. So basically, there's no magnetic field. So you can already think of there's a possibility of these fractional quantization without magnetic field. But at the time when they focus on, when they do this work, their focus is trying to explain where the quantization coming from for this fraction quantum Hall effect. Okay, so they didn't even consider anything else. So basically, this paper is just explaining where the fraction quantum Hall effect coming from, but in principle can be extended to without magnetic field. So I think at the 1987, right, Duncan Hodan has this come up this toy model. This model is I think it's the first concrete model actually to explain the chain insulator physics without a magnetic field. And in this model, right, within this honeycomb light structure, basically in certain conditions, Duncan find that the quantum Hall effect actually can happen without lambda levels at a zero magnetic field. So the effect was sort of established right at the 1980s, but only until 2013. The group in China, right, with graduate student Chi Chang and in a group of Qikun Xie, they demonstrate this quantum Hall effect at the zero magnetic field, which is called quantum anomalous Hall effect. And what they did is that they grew these magnetically doped thin and topological insulator thin films. And what they observed is that when you measure the Hall resistivities, right, you will see that the zero magnetic field, the Hall resistivity rho xy is actually quantized in a unit of h over e squares. And at the same time, the rxx is suppressed, okay? So we can come back to this phenomenon, but the key is that, right, when you have these quantized rho xy with suppressed rho xx at the zero magnetic field, this is the evidence of a quantum anomalous Hall effect, or a quantum Hall effect at the zero magnetic field. And this effect is quite exciting, but it's without interaction effects. Now, the last question is it possible to get a fraction quantum Hall effect also without magnetic field or lattice systems? And there has been a long history to kind of study the fraction quantum Hall effect in the lattice systems. The first example here is done by Laughlin. He considered these Laughlin wave functions in the spin lattice systems back to 1988. Then Nick Reed also considered these fraction quantum Hall effect in periodical potentials, basically in lattice systems. So fast forward to early 2000. Now the Coney Adam community, right, which is really developing these platform for the quantum simulations, they consider these fraction quantum Hall effect also in the optical lattice systems. So all these examples, they started to consider this fraction quantum effect in the lattice system, but still you need a magnetic field to break the time reversal symmetries. So the concept of this fraction quantum Hall effect without magnetic field was firmly established back to 2011. And there's a number of papers, right, either do modelings or do numerical calculations to establish these phenomena. So there are some detailed difference between all these papers, but there's a key message provided by all this work is that we need a flat chain band to realize these fraction quantum anomalous effect at the zero magnetic field. So the flat chain band, right, what it means is you need a flat band, where when you have a flat band, you have a strong interactions, and it's possible you can break time reversal symmetries. And you need a chain band. It means the band itself has to be topological. Okay, so those are the necessary conditions we need to realize this effect. Now, there has been a lot of work done in this field, and a lot, you know, both theory and experiment, but it turns out quite challenging to realize this fraction quantum Hall effect as in the field, right? Because you need a strong, you need a very strong interaction effect, but at the same time, you need a spontaneous time reversal symmetry breakings. So it's just really hard to get all these conditions together. So what my group found out is that in twisted MOT2 bilayers, actually we can see these effect we call fraction quantum anomalous Hall effect, or FQHE. And in such a systems, the first thing we did is we actually found a spontaneous time reversal symmetry breaking. Basically, you can create these ferromagnetism from electron-electron interactions. Then once we had a state, we developed some optical technique called transensing. So this provides us a signature of fraction quantum anomalous Hall effect. And then we overcome the challenge to make a good electronic contact to these transition metal dichotinides, right? It's a semiconductor. We perform transport measurements and observe these fractionally quantized state. So the system we develop here is actually quite robust. Now the phenomenon has also been seen in different groups, right? The Cornell group, also the group in China, in transport. And because it's a topological phenomenon, right? So it should, you know, what it means is that it should not depend on particular systems. So what's really exciting is that later last year, fraction quantum anomalous Hall effect also observed, right, in pentalayer graphene Mori superlattice, okay? So now we have two systems now to see these FQHE. One is twisted MOT2 we developed early last year, and now we have a second system, which is pentalayer graphene. So first, let me just introduce you the materials we use. It's called transition metal. Yes?
Just make sure, in the previous slide, when you said the flat chain band is necessary, do you mean it's very useful for realizing fractional anomalous quantum Hall, or is it really necessary?
It's not necessary, yeah, really necessary.
You mean there's a theoretical proof if this condition is not satisfied, then it cannot happen?
There's a theoretical proof if you have this condition, the phenomena will be realized. I don't think there's any other theory that says you can have a fraction quantum anomalous Hall without a flat chain band.
Okay. Yeah, I think in terms of theoretical models, we have those chiral spin liquid, right? In the carbon lattice, for example, and there you don't have any band structures. Start with automation chain band.
Yeah, so there's no flat chain band.
You don't really need that.
Yeah. It's also fraction excitation, but I think it's different from what I'm talking to here. Yeah.
It's not too different.
What?
It's not very different.
Well, from the radio point of view, but.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think you need, I'm not a theorist. You know, it's not like you. I don't know if you can prove for the fractional excitation. Fractional is a big topic, right? Of course, you can be there without this flat chain band. What I'm talking to is that to realize this fraction quantum Hall, the zero magnetic field. And all the theory says you need a flat chain band. Yeah. As far as I know, I don't know any other possibility to do it. Yeah. But the key point is we can do it. So this is the material systems. We have we use these transition metal dichotinides called TMDs. Here just a top view of crystal lattice, right? It's honeycomb lattice in the corner of this hexagon, right? You have these metals and coxgen. They break these inversion symmetries. So an important property of these monolayer TMD realized by my collaborator, Di Xiao and Wang Yao, is that they have these valley contrasting properties. So what it means is that these two valleys, K and the minus K, they have opposite orbital baryon curvature and also orbital moment, okay? So these valley-dependent baryon curvature and also orbital moment is important for realization of these topological properties. And our work is motivated by, actually, by Alan McDonough's work back to 2019, right? As I mentioned to you, we need a flat chain band. So what Alan predicts is that in twisted MOT2 bilayer, indeed you have a flat chain band. So he shows that in theory, right, once you have a flat chain band, you can realize these Kim-Lee models, and you can also find a rich set of broken symmetry insulin states, etc. So the paper itself is really important because they point out in twisted MOT2, you can have a flat chain band. Then later on, there's a few other works, build on Allen's work and predict that in twisted MOT2, because you have a flat chain band, it's indeed possible to realize these fractional translators. So here, what the system looks like when you have a monolayer and you stack on top of each other, right, in the same orientation and with a little twist, we have these honeycomb ladder structures. So within Murray unit cells, there's two Murray orbitals we call B and C. So these two Murray orbitals, right, B is with metal on top of oxygen, okay? So you can think of a pseudo spin pointing up. And C is coxygen on top of metal, which is a pseudo spin pointing down. So these two Murray orbitals, they are energy degenerate, so they form these honeycomb ladder structures. So we can look at these electron equations motions. These two terms, right? The first is for the position, the second is for crystal momentum. So let's look at the first equation. On the right-hand side, the second part is k dot cross this omega k. And omega k is the baryon curvature in the momentum space. So this is basically, it's a pseudo-magnetic field in the momentum space we know, give rise to these anomalous velocities. Those are terms we usually know. And then in the second part, we have r dot cross omega r. R dot basically velocity v, right? So if we have a magnetic field, we know that V cross B give you these Lorentz force, which is give you anomalous velocities. Not anomalous, I mean, just give you, you know, velocity because of these Lorentz force. But in this case, omega r is actually better curvature in the real space. And for a crystalline lattice, it's a homogeneous crystals. Therefore, omega r vanishes because we don't have these spatially variations with functions, right? And this term actually vanishes. You don't see it in any other effect. But the situation becomes different when you have a Murray superlattice, because in a Murray superlattice, actually we have these Murray atomic textures in real space. As I mentioned to you, for example, right, in this B sublattice, which is pseudo spin pointing up, and a C sublattice, which is pseudo spin pointing down. Now imagine you're coming from a sublattice B to a sublattice C. You will have a from spin up all the way become spin down, right? So during these transitions, the spin actually evolves in the real space. It's rotating from top and rotates, then going down. So this spin rotation, if you go into a two-dimensional, then form these layer pseudo spin textures, which is a skirmium. We know that if you have a skirmium type texture, then you will have these real space baryon curvatures and give rise to these pseudo magnetic field. So these emergent magnetic field from the baryon curvature in the real space actually give rise to the topology of these systems. That's also the reason is that in TMD, the phenomenon actually is quite robust, because it really depends on these layer pseudo spin textures, not on particular twist angles. That's a key difference between graphings and magic angle graphing and the TMDs. Okay?
Just to make sure.
Yeah.
As long as I have this kind of sublattice where one sublattice has a up spin, the other has a down spin, then I necessarily have this band structure.
If there's a, first of all, you need at least a layer pseudo spin textures, okay? Right.
That's guaranteed by having the locking between spins and the orbitals, right?
Yeah, so the other key things is that these two sublattices, B and C, they must be the lowest energy of the system. So if, imagine you have such a system, and the B and the C is not the lowest energy, means it's not a, you know, isolated band. If you have some other bands in the system, okay, mix up with this band, then you won't have this physics. You need an isolated band. That's what the flat band is. You need a flat band which is isolated from all the other band. That's important. Yeah. If you only have one band, yeah, that, I mean, it's simple, right? Just as Lee described. But the, in real material systems, it's much more complicated. It's like spaghetti, many, many bands there. Yeah.
Really, just to make sure, so suppose I only have an isolated band, and I have this locking between spin and orbit, then I won't necessarily have a chain band. Is this the statement?
Yeah, you need also charge hopping between these two. I'm here trying to give you a simple picture where these pseudo magnetic field are coming from. But in the real material systems, right, if you only have a pseudo spin, but they don't talk to each other, you cannot have the evolution of wave functions, right? You know what I'm saying?
I see. So it depends.
So you need basically the charge actually hops from one to the other. Then this evolution of the wave functions give rise to this effect.
So by tuning the coupling between different orbitals, can that go from a chain band to a non-chain band?
From chain band to non-chain band. I'm not sure what you're talking about.
By tuning the coupling between the orbitals, can I change the chain number?
I'm not exactly sure if it happens in these systems, in this particular model at the top band, but in the system itself, okay, you can have a different chain numbers, depends on different Mori orbitals we're talking about, Mori bands we're talking about. It is indeed possible. But in the calculations, you know, I would imagine if you change the physical parameters, right, you can also change the chain band. You can change the signs, you can change the value from 1 to 2, for example. It's all possible. People have done that. Yeah. But details is also in the, I'm not a theorist, right? You know, but my understanding is that anything can happen, right? Because the model itself is straightforward. All you need to do is change the parameter. That's why now there's a lot of theory papers says a lot of physics can happen in the system. You know, for example, the chain band can be different, right? Chain number can be different, sign can be different. Non-abelian can show up too. For example, recently there's quite a few papers says it's possible to get the non-abelian state in the system. It all depends on what the parameter you're putting. Okay.
And so, did you say the texture and the band structure, the topological band structure, is insensitive to the twist angle?
It's not a sensitive, yeah.
It's not, okay, okay.
The reason is that, as I told you, right, that it's coming from these layer pseudo spin textures.
As long as this happens, so you can.
As long as you can still have a flat band.
Okay.
When you twist it,
yeah.
Then this the physics is still here, yeah.
Okay.
Because once you twist it, you know, the bandwidth also changes.
Yes.
So how flat is flat? Nobody knows. Yeah. Because everybody say we have flat band, but there's a difference how flat is flat, and nobody really knows how flat is flat. I can give you a number, right? In graphene, the bandwidth is 10 mV. Magic and graphene, it's very flat.
Yes.
But in this TMD, the bandwidth is 1 mV. So maybe that's also a difference.
You should compare that to the Coulomb scale. So.
Yeah, the Coulomb energy here also much stronger. Because the graphene is a semi-metal, and the dielectric constant is larger, so the Coulomb interaction is much weaker. So in the TMDs, as Chong was mentioning, right, basically the Coulomb interaction is much stronger, and the bandwidth is actually narrower. So maybe that's also important. Yeah, right. You need a U of a W, you know, much, much larger. To the strong term, but I don't know. I don't know if you, how strong is strong? It's also a question for theorists, right? You know. So how flat is flat? Yeah. In theory, you can also put in number, but I think in the real material system, much more complicated because as I also mentioned in the beginning, there's so many things around it, right? How far the band from a different band. So how isolation of the band is, it's also important. It's possible that, for example, mixing of these bands with different bands, maybe this mixing also important. And this mixing may be how strong the mixing is, maybe depends on how strong the interaction is. So there's a lot of things coming into play. In real material system, it's very dirty. Yeah. I think it's a miracle, actually, we can see this effect in dirty systems. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Is this pseudo spin texture also the origin of this physics of the pentalayer graphene?
No, different, yeah. I think so far my understanding is it's not clear where these fractional quantum numbers are coming from in pentalayer graphene. Of course, right? You take a step back. What the pentalayer graphene has is flat chain band. That's clear. Flat chain band plasma ray. Then that's the key ingredients. But then there's a discussion right now in the field is whether this moray is necessary or not. From the experimental point of view, without moray, you cannot see it. So moray is important. But from a theoretical point of view, some people argue you don't need a moray. But clearly, for experiments, right, you need a moray. So it's not clear. But the fundamental are the same for both systems, which is that you need a flat chain band. Okay, I think that's why you guys are so interested in theory, but I'm gonna tell you something maybe you're not interested now. I'm gonna talk about experiments. So the first step I told you, right? What we need is spontaneous time horizon symmetry breakings. Means you need to get a fair amount of orders coming from interacting effects. On the right hand side, right at the bottom, we have this sample, which is dual gated structure. So I have a twist MOT2 and two gates, top and bottom. So with two gates, I can control the carrier densities. Here I call filling number, which is number of carriers per moray unit cells. So one means one carrier in unit cell, two means two carriers in unit cells. Okay. And then I can also apply vertical electric field in the samples. On the left-hand side is a data called magnetic circular dichroism measurements. And the data is taken at the zero magnetic field. So the vertical axis is a filling number, right? Number of carriers per moray unit cells. Minus one means one hole every moray unit cells. And the horizontal axis is electric field in a unit of millivolt per nanometer. And this magnetic circular dichroism, or MCD, right, is optical absorption difference between left and right circle polarized light. So it's a measurement. You can think of it as a measurement of Hall conductivity by the optical frequency. So it's a technique to measure these spontaneous time horizontal symmetry breakings. Now you can clearly see, right, within a phase space at the whole doping regime and with a certain range of electric field, there's non-vanishing MCD signals. It's very pretty data, actually. So the itself is already remarkable. Basically, in a semiconductor, which is non-magnetic, okay, right, MOT2 is non-magnetic. But once you control a doping and a control electric field, you can switch on the magnetism, which is spontaneous ferromagnetic order, just formed because of strong interactions. And we can control the magnetism by doping, also by applying electric field. So if you're familiar with the spintronics community, to control this magnetism is the key, right? How can we use electronic ways to kind of control the magnet orders? That's exactly what we do here, okay?
Does it depend on tilt angle? For example, if you tilt it, then with this magnetism?
Yeah, so the magnetism is here all the way from now, what I have, from all the way 2.5 degree to 4 degrees. So very large tilt angle. And the other feature I would emphasize is there's another fraction filling two-thirds. Something already appeared here, and some minus one. So that's actually the data we had initially. Once we see that, we got really excited because we have a spontaneous time horizon symmetry breaking at the fractional filling of moray. And plus, Allen theory says the system should be topological. Then we got really excited at the time when we saw this. We think it's very optimistic to see it. To confirm this magnetism, so MCD itself, if you just see MCD as zero magnetic field, in this particular system, I can tell you it's a magnetic order, but it's not necessary. I can give you a sugar water, okay? You can test yourself. If I give you sugar water, you can also see magnetic circuit. You can see circuit dichroism at the zero magnetic field. But it's not magnetic, right? Because the sugar is these chiral molecules. So in order to prove, you do have these magnetism. That's why I call MCD, because you need to apply magnetic field. So you sweep magnetic field forward and backward. Now you see a hysteresis. Okay, so that's the evidence we do have a ferro magnetic state in the system. And we can do the same thing along this whole phase space, basically everywhere else it's similar. And we can also, what I show you here, right, is the magnetism at a near filling factor minus one, means it's a first band. But in a system, as I already told you, right, there's many, many bands. You have first band, you have second band, third band. So we extend this measurement to filling factor minus three. Okay? So minus one is already showed you, like this, right? It has magnetism and filling factor minus three. We also have this finite MCD signal. So this gives you, tell you that when you fill to the second Mori band, you also have a strong interactions. And it's also introduced these spontaneous time reversal symmetry breakings. Right. That's important because now I have a first flat band, and I show you that also we can have a second flat band. If you think about the lambda levels, right, you can have you know, first lambda level, second lambda levels. Okay, so this what we're trying to do now is can we actually, right, all the physics I'm going to talk to you today is actually coming from the first band, but the direction we're going is that can we realize a flat band, but which is a mimic to the n equal to 1 lambda levels. So that's important to realize this non-abelian state.
So why is that?
So non-abelian, like the even denominator states, right, it's all coming from n equal to 1 lambda levels. Yeah.
But that's the lambda level physics, but here the microscopics is completely different, right?
Actually, that's coming from a theory. Okay. So theory is, so every, okay, we did all the experiments, right, and what do we observe? It's all gene sequence state. Then theorists, they come into, they try to understand why what we see is all gene sequence. So what they found, the first Mori chain band is basically behave like lowest lambda levels. That's what the theory is. So the experiment first shows, right, everything we see is a gene sequence. Now theory says because, well, the first band is like lowest lambda levels. Now, if we want to realize non-abelians, then we need to go to n equal to 1 lambda levels. So that's why I want to show you this feature here.
Theoretically, do people know or propose that the second band here indeed does look like the n equal to 1 lambda level?
I don't think anyone. So there's a theory now, just last month.
Okay.
There's quite a few papers that predict non-abelian states from the second. From this band, yeah. We haven't seen it. But because you know people now know, right, we can see this second band and also it's ferromagnetic. So there's a chance. I believe it's the state is layer. And the challenge is how to find it. Means how do I get the correct experimental conditions? Means twist angles, right, temperatures. Yeah. It needs a lot of luck because the phase space is actually quite large. Right now, I told you the physics I show you can appear from twist angle, say 2.5 to 4 degrees. That's just very generic for seeing magnetism, for seeing some simple states. But if we want to see these non-abelian state, maybe only happen at the very critical angles. And we don't know which angle, right? And the challenge is every time when they make samples, even though I say I mean for, say, twist angle theta, but it never comes out as angle theta. Always with theta plus or minus something. So because the phase space is so large, to find the exact state is challenging. So you have to be very lucky. And I'm not sure who will be the lucky one. Right? But I believe the state is there, yeah. I just want to show you the possibility here, okay? Let's see how much time I have. We don't have to speak the whole thing, you know. It's great, actually, you guys ask questions, so make the talk much more interesting. So we'll just stop at the 12, okay? So like I say, right, I want to tell you that now we have a second Mori band. It's also a flat band, and we can see spontaneous ferromagnetic orders.
Sorry, what happens at nu equal to minus 2?
Yeah, so at the nu minus 2, right, what the minimum is 2 is that means you have 2 carriers per Mori in the cells. And it means that you completely fill the first band, okay? And the minimum is 2, so remember I told you there's 2 valleys, right? k minus k. So at the mu minus 2, what carrier does is they feel the k band, they also feel the minus k band, the energy degenerate, okay? Then you don't have a net spin polarizations, right? So that's why we don't see anything here.
Just to make sure about the band structure. Previously, you said there's B and the C sub,
yeah.
And there's also K and K,
yeah.
Values. Are they locked? What are independent?
No. B and the C is a real space.
Yeah.
K and minus K is momentum space. They're not locked.
So there are, for each K and K prime, there's B and C.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, they're not the same thing.
Then, shouldn't I put four electrons to fully fill it?
Four electron will four field, that's correct, yeah. It's called four field a one more unit cells. That's correct. So the two means you half field. Yeah. But in this case, right, as again, we go back, right, you have a top K and a minus K. And each of them has one hose and energy degenerate, right? So you don't have net magnetisms.
Yeah. So this state has a lower energy compared to the one where I put both of them in one of K and K prime?
Say it again?
I can also put both electrons into one of K and K prime.
You can, but then you have these it's not energy favorite, right? Because you have strong interactions. So here's the thing. One K band is a spin porous, right? It's a spin porous band. So for a spin porous band, you can only have one carrier at the spin porous band. Make sense? So you have one carrier, then the spin porous band is fully filled. That's what the K is. Do you follow me? So you have one band, at least band is spin porous band because they have a chain number. So when you put one carrier on the spin porous band, this band is already full field, so you cannot put on the same band. What you need to do is you put it to a second band. Make sense?
I need to think about it.
No. Because one band is a spin porous. You can only have one carrier. One carrier already full the field band. That's it.
Let me make sure. So for both K and K prime, there's B and C sublattices. So I will if I pick up K, there will be two bands coming from B and C.
Yeah, you can think that way. So, the simplest way to think about this, either think about a real space picture or momentum space picture. Don't mix them together. That's a simple way. So you imagine if you just talk about the K space, right? You have two bands, K and minus K. Both of them are spin polarized. So for a spin polarized band, a full filling means you have one carrier is full filling. That's all you have.
Maybe I should ask you later.
No, that's just a very simple solid state physics, right? You have one band, it's spin polarized, then you have one carrier, full field band, that's it. You cannot put a second band, right? It's poly, second band has to be spin down, right? Go to a different band, which is a second Mori band. But second Mori band has energy much deeper. So you have to understand this concept, right? One spin polarized band can only host one carrier.
Maybe what I don't know is,
it's like one orbital, right?
When you say K and K prime,
yeah.
Do you mean the K and K prime before twisting or after twisting?
It's already after twisting. Yeah, it's mini band.
Oh, so by K and K prime, you mean K and K prime in the mini band?
Yeah.
I see. Yeah. Okay, now I understand.
Yeah, it's mini band. Okay. So that's what I mean, So then you have a K and a K prime, and then you have a second band, which is a second Mori band. So when you have a mu minus 3, what a mu minus 3 means is you already feel the first two band, right? K minus K, it's already filled. Then you feel the second band of K. So you can think of, if you count from minus 2, minus 3 just equal to minus 1. But the minus 1 for the second band. Makes sense, right? Because minus 2 is full filling. Yeah. So we can look at the hysteretic component of these MCDs. Right? Here I just show you the MCD at the different filling factor. Minus 2/3, for example, right? Minus 1. -3, so you see -2 is just gone. -3, there's a hysteresis. So I can take the difference of this signal forward and backward. So the leftover is just this hysteretic component. So I plot this hysteretic component in this plot, right? The vertical axis is a feeding number. Horizontal axis is magnetic field. Okay. Then what you have here is that you have these, you already see the enhancement, right? These cohesive field of -2/3 feeding, -1, and -3, et cetera. So the state itself is the signal, right? It's pretty strong. So the Curie temperature for -3 is all the way to about 5 to 6 kelvins. -1 can go to about 9 kelvins. Okay. Now I'm going to show you these transform measurements of these fraction quantum outside effect. So I have these longitudinal resistance, RXX, and on the right-hand side is Hall resistance, which is RXY. The vertical axis is electric field, and the horizontal axis is the doping. Okay. So there's a lot of interesting features in this plot, right? So look at the color scale. The deep blue means vanishing RXX. And the black means the resistance too large to measure, and red just means very large resistance. So on the right hand side, so basically looking at this map, you can see that there's a phase space, for example, right? A near feeding factor -1. We have RXX nearly vanish. But same time it looks like RXY is very strong signals. It's actually equal to H of E squares. So this is the phase, my quantum anomalous half phase. And also you can have these feeding factor -2/3, you will also see RXX is suppressed, but you have a strong RXY. Okay? So this is my fraction quantum anomalous half phase. And between -1 and -2/3, you have RXX is suppressed, and RXY is also suppressed. So this is the ferromagnetic metal phase, or anomalous half metal phase. And the last part is the RXX, near filling factor -1/2. Then RXX is also suppressed, but RXY actually is pretty large. Right? So this is the putative composite Fermi liquid phase. Now let's look at the details. So first we look at these quantum anomalous half phase. I pick, right, the condition at the zero electric field. So you can see that RXY as function magnetic field is quantized at the 1 e squared of h, and with RXX is strongly suppressed. So this basically shows we do have a quantum anomalous half state. And the quantum anomalous half state itself is pretty robust against twist angles. So here I show you three examples, right? With twist angle 3.5 degree, 3.7 degrees, 3.9 degrees. They more or less similar with quantized RXY at the zero magnetic field and with suppressed RXX. So this is the difference of TMD compared to magnetic angle graphing, right? In TMD.
Why there's a peak for RXX for different curves?
Yeah, so whenever there's a flipping of magnetizations, during this flip of magnetization, there's a magnetic domains. So give rise to these transport phenomena in terms of RXX, you see the peak. Yes. So the key message is the effect, actually, the quantum anomalous state in the system is really robust against trace angles. Now basically it's very easy to do. Every time we make a sample, pretty much it's there. Okay. It's kind of remarkable, actually, to think about the twisted system, right? You probably heard that in magic angle graphing, they also have a quantum anomalous half state. You probably heard it, right? But actually, there's only one sample in the whole world. And nobody ever repeated. But for us, you can repeat it easily. Yeah. And it's also robust against twist order. I mean, against this twist angle. So I think that's a key difference. right? Because the topology is coming from these layer pseudo-skimming, it's really robust. You can make just different twist angle as long as you still have this flat band, and these sub-ledgers B and C is still the lowest energy in the system, so you have this honeycomb. Yeah. So everything works.
Do you have an idea with the level of disorder?
You mean what type of disorder?
Good question. Do you have measurement, for example, for like normal state mobility?
Yeah, so normal state mobility is about 1,000 for these type of samples. Uh-huh. Now I have a new samples, the normal state mobility is close to 5,000. Yeah. Uh-huh. So if you're asking disorder, we sort of and to map it out, the disorder is on the order of 10 to between 10 to 11 to 10 to 12 per centimeter square. That's the disorder level.
What about the twisting angle?
Yeah, that's, I don't know. We have a collaborators actually testing the twist angle disorder. It's there. I mean, every sample you have twist angle disorders. The question is how, you know, what twist angle disorder gonna do, right? What twist angle is doing is basically to broaden these features, the width, right? Okay, you know that you need a twist, you need a disorder to see the plateaus, right?
For, you are at zero magnetic field.
No, I'm just saying for the quantum Hall stuff.
Yeah, for quantum Hall, because you're magnetic field.
Yeah, yeah, but for the zero magnetic field, I would think you still need a, so the width itself I would consider is determined by the twist angle disorder. If I don't have a twist angle disorder, I would think the width is very narrow.
Yeah.
But how narrow it is, I don't know.
Yeah. That's true.
That's what I mean. Yeah. My plateau is the doping.
Yeah.
And if I have a twist angle disorder, it means the width of my doping become larger. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now I got to this fractional state. So this fractional state, right, for example, two-thirds. So yeah, still I mesh these RxY as function magnetic field. You can see it's quantized at the 3/2 and we suppressed RxX. Yeah. One important feature of these, if I talk to you, is a pretty high temperature. So here I show you the temperature-dependent measurements of these minus two-thirds state, right? You have from top to bottom, I increase temperature from 100 millikelvin to 3 kelvins. So you can see at the 100 millikelvin, right, even at the 2 kelvin, basically, you know, the state is still quantized. So that's really high energy levels. We can also use electric field to tune the state. So horizontal axis key is electric field, and the blue curve is RxY. And red curve is RxX. So when my electric field is a bit larger than the 20 millivolt per nanometer, so you can see RxY start to decrease, and RxX actually increase to a value which is large, represents some kind of a charge order state. And at a very large electric field, these RxX also drops again, go back to some metallic state. So what this data says that once we apply electric field, we can tune the system between these fraction quantum normal surface to a topological trivial, some kind of insulating state, and then to another metallic state. So now what I show you is that the transport evidence, right? What the transport does is measure a global property of the samples, okay? You know, for example, you guys ask questions, disorders, twist angle disorder, for example, we don't know how these come into place. And when I first show these data, this quantization, some people can argue with me and say, hey, how do you know there's no multiple, you know, conducting channel inside the sample? And then eventually, whatever happens, right? When you have multiple channels, maybe some magic happens, give you this fraction quantization, it's faked. So we don't know, right? Because transform measurements, I also did the optical measurements, and I don't think I have time to talk to you, but you know, there are always people can argue with you. How do you know there's nothing inside your sample and they give you this fake phenomenon? Which I cannot answer because all the measurements do is global measurements. Another important thing for these fractional chain insulator is that as any topological insulator, right, means it's an incompressible in a bulk. and the conducting on the edges. Okay, so if we can really visualize these bulk edge correspondence, there will be a strong confirmation of these fractional quantum anomalous phases. So that's the question I want to address, right? Can we actually probe these bulk edge correspondence in the systems? Can we address this Mori disorder effect that Chong was asking? And what's the nature of electric field tuned topological phase transitions, as I just mentioned to you, you know, in previous slides? So to address all these questions, we need a local probe, right? So a local probe is called scanning probe technique. So this project in collaboration with Professor, you know, Zixuan Sheng at Stanford, with postdoc Judy Chi, Mark Barber, and my student June Park, he designed and fabricated a device. So to image all these states actually is quite non-trivial. The reason is that for any scanning probe technique, you have a metal tip, right? But if you remember I talked to you at the beginning, my sample has a top gate, meaning the two gates. So if you have a metal tip and you have a top gate, the tip actually will be screened by the top gate. You follow me, right? Then the tip cannot probe the sample under the top gate. So this is a big challenge. To overcome this challenge, we design these sample actually at top gate. We replace the top gate with graphite, which is metal. We replace it with a semiconductor, which is the monolayer WS2. So if you just use a monolayer WS2 itself because it's a semiconductor, so it doesn't function as a gate, so it doesn't work. And the beauty of this is ZX has this system. You can couple light to the samples. So this is the key. So once we have a couple light to a sample, light actually will excite the carriers in these WS2 layers. And these photo excited carriers, they are low mobility, but it's enough to function as a gate. But because the carrier is low mobility, then the screening effect also weak. So the tip actually can see through the top layer and measure the twist MOT2. So before we do this experiment, I thought you know, it's impossible, right? But actually it works. So we're very happy to see that. So the key is they use this microwave impedance microscopy, which is to measure the conductivity of the sample. Okay, they can tell the sample is either conducting or insulating. That's exactly what we measured on the right-hand side. So the vertical axis is electric field, horizontal axis is carrier dopings. And the color scale I'm using here, the dark means it's insulating, and the bright means the conduction, okay? And the data here is basically you park the tip inside the bulk of sample, so it's a really local measurement with a special resolution on the order of 100 nanometer. Now you can see that there's a field insulating state in the center of this phase, right? Let's focus on field infinity minus one first, right? You have an insulating state. Then if you tune electric field, actually transition into a metal state, and then to an insulating state again. Okay. So if you take line cuts in these samples, let's see. Somehow my computer is frozen. Yeah, if you take line cuts, not sure what's going on here. Okay. You will see that if you follow these line cuts, you will see this conductivity dip at the minus one, minus two thirds, minus three fifths, minus four sevenths, etc. Okay. So all these dip corresponding to the insulating states in the bulk, right? Because these fraction quantum anomalous phases, right? They're supposed to be incompressible states. So this is exactly what they measure here. It shows the gene sequence of these FC fractional chains of the state, right? Minus one, minus two thirds, minus three fifths, minus four sevenths.
Maybe you mentioned this, but just make sure, what is this MIM really measuring?
Conductivity.
I mean, the physical.
When you see a dip, it means it's insulating. Yeah.
You mean the physical quantity it measures has the unit of Ohm?
No, that's why they call arbitrary units. It's difficult to convert the signal strength into the exact value of, for example, exact value of the resistivity, but they can estimate the order. You know, this one, for example, right? When you see a dip, it's on the other a few hundred kilohms. Okay.
I'm asking, what's this precisely measure?
Conductivity. When you see a dip, it means it's low conductivity, so it's an insulating state, if that's what you're asking.
Are you measuring current, or are you, what exactly?
Oh, measure the absorption of so basically you have it's a microwave impedance, right? Is you're sending microwave to a sample, so the microwave will be absorbed. Okay, if there's a strong reflection, means it's a metal, right? Because microwave is not absorbed. If it's an insulator, okay.
So it's measuring the reflection and absorption.
Yes.
I see.
Yeah, at the 6.5 gigahertz for this particular case. Yeah. So whenever you see a strong dip, means the microwave is absorbed. It's an insulating phase. If it's a metal, you know, it's a screening thing, right? The microwave is reflected. So you see a conduction. That's what they measure. If you look at the peak, that's what this is. These represent the microwave lines. Yeah. You can think of it like photons, basically. Yeah. But it's a microwave frequency. So without going into details, like I said, right? All you need to care about here is either it's insulating or it's conduction. And when you see a dip, means it's an insulating state. So you have see this insulating state at its gen sequence of the fractional change phase.
And the sequence is determined by just the filling factor?
What is determined by filling factor?
The numbers, twisters.
Yeah, those are the filling number, yeah.
But did you also have separate measurement of for the whole conductance?
We cannot do it the same sample, no. But the now I can compare these measurements with my transport measurement, a different sample. They look basically the same. This is my transport I showed you at the beginning, right? You have quantum number tau. When you measure quantum number tau in the transport, RxX is supposed to vanish. But in the local conductivity, because it's a quantum number tau state, right? It's conducting on the edge, but the bulk should be insulating. So that's exactly what you measure in the bulk. So you see an insulating bulk. Okay, that's what it is. Here, at the 2/3, I see RxX vanish, but then you'll see an insulating bulk. So I think these two actually really corresponding there. For example, at a large electric field, there's a phase transition for quantum number tau to an insulating state, which is very dark here. Now they also see an insulating state here. And during the transition, the beauty of these mean measurements is during the phase transition, they can determine they actually a metallic state formed. Means the gap actually is closed. Right? You find insulating to a metal to an insulator. That's a phase transition here from quantum number tau to a modern insulating state. So I think these two measurements basically the same measurements, but they measure very different properties. On the left-hand side is a global transport measurement, mainly determined by the edge transport. On the right-hand side is a local conductivity measurements, but they tell you the same thing. The local conductivity tell you whenever you have a change insulated state, the bulk is incompressible. And on the left-hand side, whenever you have a change insulated state, the RxX vanishes.
But you cannot measure RxY.
RxY is what I showed you at the beginning here. All these are RxY measurements, yeah, everything here.
I see.
That's all RxY, everything I was just talking to you. Yeah.
But this is only for new equal to 1, what about other things?
That's what I just talked about, yeah.
I see, thanks.
Yeah.
So in these cases, why are the peaks lower than, for the fractional finnings, why are the peaks lower than the individual finning?
What is lower?
The peak, this peak for RxX.
I'm not sure what you mean. Which peak?
These two.
Oh, you mean the resistivity?
Yeah.
For the insulating state? These are the nature of these insulating states are different. The one at the -1, it's actually a mod insulating state. Right? It's basically a triangle lattice, exactly half yield triangle lattice. It's you can think of it as the gap is larger, it's a mod. And the fraction filling, what you have is a generalized Wigner crystal state, the gap is smaller. So when you have a smaller gap, then the resistivity is lower.
But for this triangular mod insulator, do you know if there is a magnetic order?
Yeah, it's anti-ferromagnetic.
Okay.
Yes. That's what we did in our first magnetism paper. So we matched everything in magnetic state. So what we found is everything above here, it all looked like antiferromagnetic from our measurement. Okay, let's see. Yeah, I'll just summarize it, okay? We already, time is running out. I want to show you this piece of beautiful data. I already show you there's a bulk edge correspondence, right? The bulk is insulating, so I want to see if it's really there's edge state. So here's imaging from filling factor minus 1.33. It's a metal phase. You see this whole sample is lights up. But if you go to filling factor minus 1, which is quantum number top, you see edge lights up, but the bulk is insulating. Okay? So that's exactly what you expect from a quantum number top phase, right? You have a conducting edge with an insulating bulk. And the same thing happens at the fractional state, minus 2/3, minus 3/5, right? You have a insulating bulk with conducting edges. So to emphasize, actually, believe it or not, this is the first measurement of any fractionally quantized edge state. Even though fraction quantum hum been there for 40 years, but never been measured at the edge state because it's very challenging. You don't have a good technique to measure it. And also the experimental condition for fraction quantum hum, right, it's hard. You need a high magnetic field, you need very low temperatures. But the sample I show you for this minus 2/3, it's a zero magnetic field and can survive up to a few kelvins. So this makes it possible to actually image the conducting edge but over fractional states. Okay, I think I will, this will be last slide. I think I want to talk to you about this state. So this state is that at the half field flat chain band, we see RxY actually quantized to 2 edge over E square. It's half chain band. But it's not the, but you look at, but it's different from these 2/3 filling and the 3/2 filling because each of them has a little plateau, but at the half filling, there's no plateaus. Even though the signal is a strong anomalous Hall signal, but it's not plateaus. So you can compare to what's being done in the quantum whale system. So here's the quantum whale data. X axis is magnetic field, it's equivalent tuning the filling factor. So there's a plateau at the 2/3 fillings, plateau at 3/5 filling, couple wiggles, then you see RxY linearly increase as function of a magnetic field, right? And across these two edge V squares. So this is what we measured in twist MOT2, right? You see plateaus at 3/2 and plateau 3/5, and then linear increase across two edge V squares. So very much looks similar. And this half field lowest on level state is being, attributed to these composite Fermi liquid state. So the data we have here actually suggest the half field flat chain band give rise to this zero field composite Fermi liquid state. Okay. It's a non-Fermi liquid state. This is the experimental evidence we have. It's not a proof, it's just suggesting. But from a theoretical point of view, right, Liang Fu and also Ashwin, they already done these calculations for the half field flat band in twist MOT2. So the theory suggests it's indeed actually a composite Fermi liquid state. So I'll just stop here. I think, this is a very good talk. I like all the questions you guys ask, even though you only have a few people, but this is a very most likely talk I have. Yeah, thank you guys for the questions. But the other half, which is not finished, but it's good.
So we have time for a few questions.
So in such samples, can you do something like the anion interferometer to detect anions?
I cannot hear you clearly. I hear the word anions. Yeah.
Anion interferometer.
Yeah, so this is one thing we're trying to do, how make an anion interferometer. Yeah. So you can consider the sample itself just like 2D electron gas, it's the same. So whatever technique the community already developed can be used here. The question is whether the sample quality is good enough to do that. Yeah. That takes a lot of work. Even for the 2D electron gas system, right, it takes people over almost 20 years to eventually get an anion interferometer. So I don't know how long we need to do that. Yeah.
Did you see anything interesting about the metal insulator transition?
did I see anything interesting? I don't know how to define interesting.
For example, do you see the transition between the fractional quantum Hall state and the metallic state is maybe continuous?
Yeah, so what I see is finally it's a fractional state to the charge order state, which is insulating. In my view, it's a continuous phase transitions. So you can see that, right? Let me go back.
Charge order meaning charge density wave?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So this is the phase transition, right? From here, here's the transport. And we did a very careful measurements by sweeping the electric field forward and backward. We don't see any hysteresis. Okay? Then this is the local conductivity measurements. You can see from insulating to another insulating in the metal, the boundary, phase transition boundary is a metal. So the gap is closed, but this also is continuous. So I talked to a few theorists, you know, everybody says, no, by theory, right? From theory point of view, it must a first order phase transition. But that's what the theorists told me. No? Okay, so different theories tell me different things then. What I see is a continuous phase transitions. Yeah. Then well, whatever, the theorists when I talk to, no, it must be first order. I said, no, my measurement says it's continuous.
Can you summarize the evidence for it to be continuous?
Yeah, so what we did, we sweep the electric field forward and backward, right? So you want, if you see a first order, there should be a sudden jump and with a hysteresis. We don't see that. We see a continuous evolution of these resistivities as functional electric field, and there's no hysteresis. We did many different measurements. We measure resistivities, we measure magnetizations, everything is smooth. Yeah. So I think it's a first order, sorry, it's a continuous phase transitions.
And can I get some continuous moment?
That's hard to do. We tried, it's very difficult.
For example, you have access to magnetization, right?
Yeah. Magnetizability, basically. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe there you can get some exponent.
I don't know how much I can trust this. I think we tried. It just make no sense, so we don't know. Yeah.
You sure? This is just one third or two third to charge density wave on what part is triangle? Or?
This is a question I don't know. I haven't measured, but I will guess it's a triangle because if you want to know exactly what it is, you have to do real space imaging, which I don't. Measure the charge order itself. Yeah. But I would guess at the two third feeling, it's a triangle lattice. It's a reasonable guess. Yeah.
So actually, you showed data for, let's say, -3/5 and so on, right? Do you see states at as -1/3, -2/5, or those, the other half of the GMT?
Yeah, so we don't see -1/3. -1/3, we know it's actually a topological trivial insulator. We know that. We measured it, yeah.
Okay.
So we don't see 2/5 state in our system yet. So I think the symbol quality is not there.
So you basically say it's half of those gen segments. There.
Exactly, yeah.
So this is strongly particle hole, not symmetric.
Which is not a surprise, right? Because it lied the system.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so I guess we can stop here.
Well, thank you guys for all the questions.